Good morning and welcome to Sports Interview with Ann Liguori on this Saturday morning. How are we doing this morning? So glad you can join me where I am every Saturday morning right here on WLIW 88.3 FM Southampton, serving Eastern Long Island and Southern Connecticut, 96.9 in Western Suffolk, and streaming at WLIW.org/radio and on your favorite streaming platforms. Each show is archived on my website at annliguori.com, that's annliguori.com, and distributed on my podcast via Audioboom and iTunes. Well, thanks to everybody who came out to support my 25th annual Ann Liguori Foundation Charity Golf Classic at Friar's Head. It is such a special golf course and clubhouse, as you know, here on the east end of Long Island, overlooking the Long Island Sound, and the course is in prime condition. The greens are perfect, and every year we raise money for cancer research and help a variety of different not-for-profits. Colleen Neri from St. Jude joined us and talked about the extraordinary work that St. Jude Children's Research Hospital does. They are one of our many beneficiaries, and just had a super day. The weather has been phenomenal, and I want to thank all our sponsors, ABM, Tommy and Shonda Foster, TaylorMade, Casa de Campo, Dune and Burke, iKing Eyewear, Ivy Cool Athleisure Apparel, of which I'm their global ambassador, Imperial Hats, Indigo East End, Nailed Golf, Shelley West, North and West Coast Links Golf Ireland, Defossi Sunglasses, Peak Vision, Tour Edge, and you know, the entire golf industry, just very, very generous. And it's just great to be a part of this wonderful golf industry and all these people who really support not only this cause, obviously, but so many really great causes. So just want to thank all of you for coming out and supporting 25 years. Can you believe it? I think I started when I was 10. Anyway, we are in the midst of the BMW Charity Pro-Am in Greenville, South Carolina. It is the biggest Corn Ferry tournament on the schedule. And I'm honored to have gotten an invitation to play in the celebrity division for the third straight year. And it's just really fun to play with these professionals, these guys on the Corn Ferry Tour, which is the development tour of the PGA Tour, featuring professional golfers who have either not yet reached the PGA Tour or who have played on the PGA Tour, and because they did not earn enough FedEx Cup points, they go back to the Corn Ferry circuit. Either way, the talent is very deep, and I've had really good experiences the last 3 years with the pros that I've had. Austin Eckroat was my pro the first year I played in the BMW Charity Pro-Am, and he's on the PGA Tour now. And really playing well. He's been in contention in a number of tournaments recently and came in runner-up in the AT&T Byron Nelson. So it's fun to follow Austin's progress. And I was there when he played in his first professional tournament on the Corn Ferry Tour. There's going to be a lot of celebrities at this event. David Wells, Ken Griffey Jr., Jesse Orosco, Seth Curry will be there. From the Brooklyn Nets, Larry Fitzgerald from the NFL, Jason Scheff, who played for Chicago, Pudge Rodriguez, to name a few. This morning, you will hear conversations that I've had with three women in the golf industry, all very diverse, all really the best at what they do. Remember Betsy King? Well, Betsy won 6 major championships and 34 LPGA Tour events. She played in the late 70s and throughout the 80s and 90s and actually early into the 2000s as well. And she represented the U.S. on 5 Solheim Cup teams and was the captain of the 2007 Solheim Cup team. And in 2017, Betsy founded Golf for Africa, F-O-R-E, for Africa, which helps children in various countries in Africa and partners with World Vision to fund various projects that help bring hope to women and children in communities throughout Africa. Molly Marcot-Simon is the LPGA commissioner, and I spoke to her just before the start of the LPGA Cognizant Founders Cup, the first of four tournaments for the women pros that are in New Jersey in a span of 6 weeks in May and June of this year. Jin Young Ko won the Founders Cup for the third time in 5 years. She beat Minji Lee in a playoff, and the tournament took place in Clifton, New Jersey at Upper Montclair Country Club, an original A.W. Tillinghast design. And Michelle Wee West, you remember her when she played on the LPGA Tour. She was a very impressive amateur as well. Michelle retired from the LPGA Tour 2 years ago. She married Johnny West, the son of NBA icon Jerry West, and they had a baby. Michelle was actually the host of this year's Mizuho Americas Open, which is one of four new tournaments on the LPGA Tour this year, and it took place at stunning Liberty National in Jersey City, New Jersey. The course and modern clubhouse, which overlooks the Manhattan skyline and the Statue of Liberty, just striking. You will hear my conversation with Michelle Wee West about this brand new tournament. Rose Zhang had turned pro about a week before the Mizuho Americas Open, the two-time NCAA individual champion for Stanford. Her eight wins this season tied Tiger Woods for the most by a Stanford player in school history. She spent 141 weeks as the number one ranked amateur in the world, the most by any other player. She won everything you could win in the amateur ranks, including the 2020 U.S. Women's Amateur, the 2022 and 2023 NCAA Division I Championships, as I just mentioned. She was actually the first woman to win that individual title twice. And I saw her win the Augusta National Women's AM title at Augusta National in April. And she's just so impressive. And she won the tournament, her first pro event. She gets out there and wins. She won on the second playoff hole against Jennifer Kupcho. And by doing that, she became the first player to win on her very first pro tournament since Beverly Hansen did in 1951. So it's been a while. She didn't actually have her best stuff on Sunday. She fought to a plus 274, holding off charges from Eun Hee Ji, Aditi Asuk, and Jennifer Kupcho, whom she beat in that playoff. But what composure Rose Zhang showed. She's only 20 years old, just graduated from Stanford, and just turned pro. And she is a seasoned, looks like a seasoned veteran out there, even though she is a rookie. She is no doubt going to be a superstar in women's golf. She has a game for it, and more importantly, she has the mental game for it. She's just so impressive. The tournament also has a junior golf component side to it, as 24 of the top American Junior Golf Association players actually played their own tournament, a Stableford competition, alongside the professionals this past weekend. And Yana Wilson won the AJGA portion of it. Just such a great experience for these junior players to learn from the professionals, from the greatest professionals in the game. Just incredible. She had four bogeys and five birdies in her round. Yana Wilson. Hope you enjoy this sports interview show. Now is the commissioner of the Ladies Professional Golf Association, Molly Marcot-Simon. Hey, Molly, it's a pleasure to welcome you back.
Hey, Ann. Good, yeah. How you doing?
Good to have you on again. And, wow, the LPGA will be front and center in this area with four tournaments taking place in literally a span of 6 weeks in May and June in New Jersey. And that's exciting. I mentioned the tournaments at the top of the show. You have the Cognizant Founders Cup, May 10 to 14 at Upper Montclair Country Club in Clifton, New Jersey. You have the Mizuho Americas Open, May 30th to June 4 at Liberty National in Jersey City. Of course, the ShopRite LPGA Classic, June 7th through the 11th at Seaview in Galloway Township near Atlantic City, New Jersey. And then at Baltusrol. None other than Baltusrol, the second major championship on the women's calendar, the KPMG Women's PGA Championship, June 21st to the 25th. So, boy, talk about a Grand Slam home run for golf fans, right?
Yeah, I mean, go Jersey, right? I mean, this is going to be an amazing 6 to 7 weeks, and we couldn't be more excited. I mean, huge golf fans in Jersey and the New York area, Philly area. You know, we sort of hit all of the whole tri-state. So we're hoping that fans come out from all around and, you know, going to see the best golf in the world.
And you have some incredible venues. I mean, Upper Montclair, an A.W. Tillinghast design. I know Robert Trent Jones Sr. renovated it back in the 50s, but, you know, that's an incredible golf course. They've hosted tournaments for all three pro golf tours through the years. And then Liberty National, what a, you know, venue that is for the Mizuho America's Open. And then, of course, Seaview, that's a Donald Ross design. He completed it back in 1915, and then Robert Cupp Jr. restored it for the ShopRite, you know, the ShopRite LPGA Classic that's been there for a long time. And then, of course, I mentioned Baltusrol. So the venues are really strong, and not just in this area, but, you know, on the whole schedule, right?
Yeah, no, they are. And that was a big goal of ours, and I think the big goal of our major championships. I mean, these, again, as I said, these are the best women in the world. When you think about how many women play golf around the world, and to be able to say that, you know, the LPGA features the very best, is remarkable, and they should be playing on the best golf courses. And the talent is so extreme that they need to be challenged at the very best. And I think it's also great for our fans to see them playing at some of the venues that the men play and being able to compare, because I think we come out really strong on that comparison.
Well, talk a little bit more about the Cognizant Founders Cup. I just love that tournament because it really honors, you know, the women who the founding members of the LPGA.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think a lot of people know the story of the 13 founders of the LPGA. I mean, the LPGA was founded in 1950, which, you know, we've been celebrating over the last couple of years, Title IX, the 50th anniversary of Title IX. So this was 22 years before Title IX. And women were making money playing golf and were really doing it on their own in a time when, you know, people weren't really even accepting of women playing sports, let alone making sports their profession. I always look at this stat, Babe Dietrichson-Zaharias, I think she made $14,000 in 1950 playing golf, which, you know, $14,000 sounds like nothing, but when you take that present value of that money, and it's something like $235,000 or $250,000 in today's earning power, which is pretty remarkable given where women's sports is even now today in 2023. So these were a group of remarkable women who had a passion, had a vision. They wanted to change the world. They wanted to do hard things and show women they could do things that people traditionally thought they couldn't. So this tournament celebrates them and celebrates the accomplishments that they had in golf, but also really in women's sports, but in my mind, for women more broadly. So it's really fun. We've got a number of alumni coming back. We honor, we would honor founders. Now, really none of them, we have one founding member still alive, but not able to be there with us. But, so we're bringing back, you know, the next group, you know, of pioneers who really started and moved the LPGA forward in that next era. So this year we're honoring Betsy King, and Pia Nielsen, which is really fun to be able to look back at their careers and say, kind of, how did you move the LPGA forward? And so they'll be sitting on the perch. We'll have some other alums coming through, and it's a great celebration.
And yeah, I remember seeing Nancy Lopez there last year. Have you spoken to Marlene Hagg? I think she's, what, 89 years old.
Yeah, I have not. You know, I think she's, I have not. I don't know that she's able to kind of be with us. I think she's, you know, has some dealing with some health stuff. And so we're, but yeah, Nancy, I believe Nancy's coming back again this year. She always does. She's just such an amazing ambassador of the game, and she's so committed to the LPGA. And, you know, being able to have her there and others is really important for the LPGA, because the traditions and the history are so different and so unique that we love to celebrate it. And so this is one of our favorite weeks of the year by far.
And if I remember correctly, I think the 13 LPGA founders will be inducted into the World Golf Hall of Fame next year.
Yeah, all the remaining founders, all the remaining founders that weren't previously in the World Golf Hall of Fame are coming in as a group, which is, again, a really remarkable tribute to the accomplishments that they made collectively. And that's really collectively, I think, is the important word. I mean, we have a saying that Mike Wann really coined is just act like a founder. That's part of our culture. And it's like, you know, wake up every day trying to make the game better, trying to make the organization better, and putting that first. And that's what these women did. You know, they were writing the press releases. They were pounding in the stakes. They were going out selling tickets. They were running all parts of it. And so this is, again, it's a great celebration.
So I know the LPGA has a lot to celebrate. The total prize money on the tour this year, I read, will surpass $100 million, which, I mean, when you look at, you know, where the tour has come in the last, say, 5 or 10 years, that's incredible. And like for the Cognizant Founders Cup, they're based right in New Jersey, and they continue as the tournament's title sponsor. So it's really commitments like these that make that huge difference with the LPGA.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, Cognizant's purse is $3 million. We have four tournaments this year over $3 million. We're playing this week out in California at the JM Eagle LA Championship, and that's a new tournament, and the purse is $3 million. Obviously, Cognizant, we've got two others. And it's really just it's a tribute to the value that people see in what we do. So I think in New Jersey this year, before we jumped on the call, I was adding up the purses just in New Jersey. I think it's close to $17 million. KPMG Women's PGA Championship at $9 million, you know, the LPGA, the Shockery LPGA Classics at $1.75 million, Mizuho is at $2.75 million. So these are big purses that our women are playing for. But like you said, we're playing for $104 million, and I think that'll still grow throughout the course of the season. That is up 50% since 2019, and actually really 2021 because we had COVID in the middle, and 19 and 21 were basically the same amount, so it was about $70 million. That's a 50% growth in that short time. And 10 years ago in 2013, I think we were playing for something like $50 million. So that's 100% growth in the 10 years. So again, I think people are really valuing the product, they're valuing the brand, they're valuing the tremendous talent of our players. And that's resulting in some great numbers for us.
So now I read where the LPGA Tour is exploring a potential merger with the Ladies European Tour. What's the latest on that, Molly?
Yeah, we've been in a joint venture with the LET since 2019, and I think I think it's really important to have clear pathways for players around the world and to have not have a fractured golf environment. So it's really we're a very mission driven organization. You know, we're about being the leader in women's golf and really in women's sports, and then using our platform to elevate girls and women, both, you know, on the golf course and off the golf course. So we want to provide the clearest pathway for all players, you know, no matter what their dreams are and what they're trying to do. So we when we got involved with the LET, I think they were struggling financially. And, you know, we wanted to help grow golf, women's golf. And so that's kind of what the impetus of the partnership was. And now we're just exploring, you know, we're in this joint venture and we're exploring if there's a larger relationship to be had. But nothing specific to report. We're just talking to players on both sides, you know, both the LPGA and the LET players, and making sure that this would be a good decision for everyone. I mean, we really think, again, a combined and cohesive women's golf environment is really important.
Absolutely. And, you know, Greg Norman said recently that they would love to see a LIV Ladies Tour. And I was wondering if you've heard from anybody from LIV.
Yeah, no, I'm not exactly sure what specific, you know, conversations he was talking about. Again, we're pretty focused on what we're doing, and there's nothing new to report there. We're really, really bullish on, as you said before, on the direction of the LPGA and the tremendous partners that we have who really see the value in what we're doing and our mission and our values. So, yeah, nothing new to report there.
All right. So you haven't heard from anybody over there. But do you think about how it might affect the LPGA if that were to happen?
Yeah, I mean, again, we try not to speculate. We're just really focused. We got our heads down. We're focused on the LPGA and, like I said, the great momentum that we have.
So in a Links magazine article last year, you said that only 7 to 8% of all media coverage is focused on women, and only 4 to 7% of sports sponsorship goes towards women's sports. Has that improved at all since last year? Do you know?
I don't know that the numbers, you know, again, that number is a little hard to grab onto when people try to find that exact number. I do know that I think the latest statistic I saw was that $57 billion is invested in sports worldwide. And I think $1 billion of that goes to women's sports. So we've got an uphill battle. I think all women's sports are growing and it's phenomenal to see. And we're all in it together. I mean, I think we think the rising tide lifts all boats, and we're thrilled when the other sports leagues, have success and when their valuations are growing and people are like viewership in all sports is growing significantly. I'm not sure if you saw last week, but we had, I think 1.5 million viewers on NBC during our playoff at the Chevron Championship, which was phenomenal. I know the NCAA women's basketball had great viewership. I think all the leagues are showing tremendous growth. So there's a lot of room between, whether it's 5% or 7%, there's a lot of room between 5 and 7% and obviously 93 or 95%. So I think we're focused on that, focused on reducing that delta.
And I know in all your travels in business, you advocate for all women's sports, which I think is great. The LPGA has always been a leader. And, if other sports do well, the LPGA is going to continue to do well, right?
Absolutely. I mean, as I said, we had a great summit last week with some of our leaders in the golf industry and some women's sports experts. And we're, as I said before, we're all in this together. I mean, it's sort of like, how do we continue to look differently? How do we break down some of the structures that have existed for a long time that make it hard for us to catch up? How do we think creatively and do things differently in the women's sports world? And so, as I said before, we're thrilled when we see great numbers in women's sports and in any sport. And I think we're also drafting off of each other. We had at our event last week that was a really great summit and a really great opportunity for the golf industry to come together to think about how we elevate women's golf. And we had the chief revenue officer from Angel City, which is the one of the NWSL teams out in LA, and she was phenomenal, and Jess Smith, and she was talking about how they've been innovative and what they've done to grow their revenue and to grow their corporate sponsorship and to get more interest in women's soccer and in the game. And so we share best practices, and we all think about how we can do this together.
I love the fact that you had the PGA Tour commissioner there. You had Seth Waugh there from the PGA of America, and Mike Wan was there. You got everybody. Normally these guys get together at the men's events, but to have them at, the first women's major on the calendar, the Chevron Championship, was key, I thought.
Yeah, and we had Artie Starrs there, who's the CEO of Topgolf, who's a great partner also. And so it's kind of like, how does the golf industry come together to elevate women's golf and use this platform that we have, because golf's such a great sport and we're also connected. How do we use that platform to, be able to elevate women more broadly? And so it was great. It was phenomenal. We were thrilled that they were able to make it, and they're so committed to us and to what we're doing. And that partnership to me is everything.
Well, you've been the LPGA commissioner for over a year now. You're doing a great job. You hit the ground running, and just continued success. It's so exciting for, the best female golfers in the world. And I know it can't be an easy job. I don't know how much golf you can actually play. You're probably too busy, but it's great to talk to you, and continued success, and hit them straight on the golf course when you do have a chance to play golf.
Okay. You too, Anne. Well, I hope you get out there as well. And I do try to play. I got to play last week at Chevron, and I'm going to play this week at the Hanwha Life Plus International Crown. We're playing at Harding Park, so I'm going to play in the Pro-Am out there next week, too. So I got to get my game in order.
I know you're a player. You're a great athlete. Molly, thank you so much. I hope you can be with us again in the future.
Okay. Thanks a lot, Ann.
Thanks so much. LPGA Cognizant Founders Cup is taking place in Clifton, New Jersey at historic Upper Montclair Country Club. And joining me now is LPGA legend, Hall of Famer, winner of 6 major titles, 34 LPGA Tour titles, Betsy King.
Hi, Anne. It's great to be with you this morning. It's a really beautiful day in the New York area, so I'm looking forward to watching the final round of the tournament today at Upper Montclair.
And congratulations on being honored as a pioneer this week. What has been the highlight of your week so far?
I think the highlight has been the opportunity to be around the current players, and then to see the girls' golf program in action yesterday. They had a clinic for the girls, and it's really neat to see the young girls out and learning golf. And they have a lot of fun. They do a lot of things beside golf just to create interest in the game and for the girls to have fun. So that was really great to see yesterday.
There's always a lot of things going on at these LPGA Tour events. And I saw you sitting on the platform overlooking the 18th, and you have that sign up there that says, "Act like a founder."
Right, right. Yeah, that came about when Mike Wong was commissioner of the LPGA, and he had talked with Louise Suggs, one of the founders, and she was so passionate about the tour going forward and continuing to grow and thrive. And everything that the founders did to get the tour going is what, we try to keep the players thinking about in terms of how they interact with fans and sponsors and pro-am partners, et cetera, just to keep the tour growing and thriving.
I mean, I love how the LPGA really honors the women who built the LPGA, as you said, you know, and the young people, a lot of them don't realize what it was like, you know, for these women to do that. And they built it into the world's oldest and most successful women's professional sports league. And that
yes.
is incredible to say that, right?
It really is. And, I think our history is unique at the LPGA because it was a group of 13 women that came together back in 1950 to start the tour. And they really were the ones that put it together and kept it running. As you said, they did the roping on the course. They made the rulings. They wrote the checks at the end of the week. They called the newspaper to get the scores in. They made appearances to publicize the tour. So they really did everything to get the tour growing. And I really can't think of another sport that it was the players that started the tour and kept it going.
And I'm sure you must have known some of the 13 LPGA founders, right? Any special memories you can share with any of the women that you might have known?
I knew Marilyn Smith, Louise Suggs, Patty Berg, Marlene Hagee was still playing when I came on tour. And Patty Berg actually played out in the desert at the Dinosaur one year when I was still playing, and Louise Suggs. So I knew them quite well. I guess maybe Patty Berg, my first connection with her was when I saw her give a clinic. She came to Furman University where I played college golf, and she interacted with us as players on the team and gave her famous clinic. She was well known for all the clinics that she did on behalf of Wilson Golf. And she just had this the ability to perform in front of an audience. She was very outgoing and did this great golf clinic. Louise Suggs was very passionate about the game. Marlene played for a long time on the tour, was kind of a glamour girl of the tour early on in her career. And I just loved all of them. Marlene's still living. She's the only founder that's still living, and she lives out in California and is not able to be here. But I learned a lot. And of course, Marilyn Smith, she was called Miss Personality, and she really had a great personality. And they still honor her in Arizona. They have an event that raises money for scholarships for young girls. So she really, all the founders were unique in different ways. And of course, probably the most well-known founder was Babe Zaharias, and she was kind of one of the big stars early on the LPGA tour.
It's such great history. I remember I did a TV interview with Patty Berg. That had to have been, gosh, 20, 25 years ago. And the passion, you know, that comes from these women about, you know, the LPGA and being a founder. I mean, it was just, you know, just infectious just to talk to her. I loved talking to her every second of it. Well, let's talk about the leaderboard. I am so impressed with Minji Lee. Always have been. She's the defending champion. She's a 12 under. She leads by 3 shots heading into today's final round. And gosh, I can watch her play nonstop. She shot a 5 under 67 yesterday. She had an eagle on the 12th. What are your thoughts about Minji Lee?
I think Minji's going to be tough to beat. You know, she won here last year at Upper Montclair. And, you know, when you like a golf course, even, you know, you may not be playing that well coming into a tournament, but you come to a course that you like and it seems to awaken your game. And Minji's playing really well this week. The golf course is, it's playing sort of like a U.S. Open course except for the length. The rough's pretty high. The greens are very firm. And the greens there at Upper Montclair are undulating. So, you know, to shoot the scores that they're shooting is really good because I think the course is challenging. But, you know, I Angel Yin, who's tied for second, three shots back, she lost a playoff earlier this year at the Chevron, has not won on the tour, but has tremendous talent. She hits the ball a long way. So I think it's going to come. It's either going to be Minji or, you know, one of the people in the last couple groups, because with a three-shot lead, you know, that kind of gives you a cushion that you can make a couple mistakes along the way and still win. And Minji's such a competitor. You know, she hits the ball really well, very consistent. And actually, she led the tour in approach to the green, meaning how close she hits the ball to the green, to the pin, rather, when she's playing. At all distances, from 100 yards to 200 yards. So that's a pretty amazing stat.
Absolutely. Her iron game is incredible. Those approach shots and, you know, this consistency, and she's so composed. And when you look at these women playing these days, Betsy, I mean, how good are they compared to the players when you played on tour? And you played from, what, 1977 to 2005?
Yeah, well, I think the difference is obviously the technique in terms of, you know, being able to see your golf swing, all the teachers that everybody works with today, and the fitness side of it. You know, everybody's just better. You know, you like to think as a champion, it wouldn't matter what era you played in, if you had all those opportunities, that you would do well too. But, you know, I think it's elevated everybody's game. The equipment definitely has made a difference. There's no question about it. It'll be interesting to see what happens, you know, with the what they're doing with the golf ball, if that ends up going through and they make it so you can't hit it as far. Because I hit the ball further as a 50-year-old than I did as a 25-year-old. And that purely was between the equipment, between the golf ball and the clubs that I was playing.
Wow. How much further?
Well, when I was 25, I hit a 5-iron 150 yards. When I was 50, I hit it 170 yards.
Oh, my gosh.
So, yeah, so it made a difference. I would say off the tee, it was probably a 20 to 30-yard difference. And then, of course, with the clubs, about a 20-yard difference per iron, just because of the equipment. Plus, it's more forgiving. You know, it was designed where you could get the ball up higher. Excuse me. And, you know, I think that's one of the reasons that you see the scoring the way you do, where everybody, you know, is scoring better. So,
right. Well,
I
read where you averaged winning a major a year from 1987 to 1992, and then you won your sixth major title in 1997. So in addition to, you know, earning 34 LPGA Tour titles, you won the big ones. You had six majors. Did your mindset differ when you were playing and winning major championships and in the week-to-week tour events?
Well, at the majors, the courses are usually set up a little bit harder than the rest of the year, and I always liked that. I became a very good putter, and I hit the ball pretty high in that era, you know, without having hybrids, et cetera, at the time.
Right.
And so, you know, on the firm greens, that was a bit of an advantage. And then, if I were to use one word for any major that you need to key on, is patience. Because it is playing harder, you have to realize that everybody's going to have their stretches where they make a couple bogeys. And the key is to not, you know, try not to make more than a bogey, and just to have patience and to play a little bit more conservatively, you know, to hit, not to necessarily go for pins that are really tough, because when the greens are firmer, it's always harder to score because, you know, you have to play for release on the green. But I enjoyed playing the majors. And, you know, I obviously had some success there. And, you know, I had a kind of a different career because it took me almost 7 years to win my first event. And then I won 34 times. I don't think there's anyone in the history of the LPGA that's done that. You know, usually when you win that many times, you start within a year or two that you're on the tour, and then you just keep continuing. But once I learned how to win, it just opened the floodgates, and I repeated it.
And when you say learn how to win, what was it exactly that you learned, do you think?
For me, it was realizing that you didn't have to play perfect golf for 4 days to win a tournament. You realize that everybody makes mistakes. It's how we recover from those mistakes. And that really was the key. I think in my head, before that happened, I thought, I'm going to have to play the round of my life 4 days in a row to win. But when you play as much golf as we do, and I'm sure your listeners feel the same way, there's just certain days where you feel more confident than others, that your timing's there, et cetera. But when you're playing week in, week out on the tour, no one has that feeling every day. So you kind of learn to score when you're not necessarily hitting the ball the best. And, you know, if you can keep it around par or a couple under when you're not hitting the ball well, and then when you are hitting it well, you know, that's when you go really low. And then, of course, it's hard to get everything together at the same time. You can putt well but not hit the ball well. You hit the ball well, you don't putt well, et cetera. So golf's just a challenging game. I learned a lot from the time I came on tour. I kept getting better as a player, and I think that's the key, too, that you just try to keep getting better, whether it be you know, with your short game or with your golf swing.
Your charity work in Africa has been outstanding, Betsy. And before I let you go, I want to hear about Golf for Africa, F-O-R-E, and the impact it has made. I think you formed it back in 2007.
We did. I took a life-changing trip to Africa in 2006. To be honest, I'd never seen poverty at that level. Not, you know, we see that here in the U.S. to a point, but when you walk into a community that has no electricity, no running water, dirt floors, and the entire community is in that setting, it's very life-changing. So what through Golf for Africa, we've done a number of things, but the last 10 years, we've been concentrating on bringing clean water to rural communities in Africa. And so far, we've been able to bring clean water to over 450 communities, as well as water mechanized systems at health clinics and schools, about 75 of those. And so we've just been able to really impact communities. Once a community has clean water, it really is the first step to get out of extreme poverty. So I'm headed back to Africa in August, which will be about my 26th trip to Africa. And every time I go, I'm inspired by the people that I meet there, and it just makes me want to do more. We have an event on Monday at the Creek Club. We have 14 LPGA pros coming to play with amateurs to raise money for Golf for Africa. But we have our website, golfforafrica.org, F-O-R-E, Africa, and so anyone that wants to learn more can go there and support us if they'd like to. $50 brings clean water to one person for a lifetime. So it doesn't take a lot to make a big difference.
You are a legend, Betsy King, on and off the course. Continued success, and thank you so much for spending some time here with us. Really appreciate it.
Well, thanks, Anne. I've known you for a long time, so it's good to talk to you again. Thank you.
Enjoy the final round at the Founders Cup. Hope you're enjoying the day so far, and if you are on your way to a tee time, glad you're tuning in and wishing you a great round. Well, the inaugural Mizuho Americas Open is a brand new LPGA tournament that takes place May 29th through June 4th at Liberty National Golf Club in Jersey City, New Jersey. And joining me now to talk about it is the tournament host, the one and only Michelle Wee West, five-time winner on the LPGA Tour and 2014 U.S. Open winner. Hey, Michelle, welcome to Talking Golf.
Hi, thanks for having me on.
It's so great to connect. And well, let's first start with this tournament, because I know it's a brand new event on the LPGA Tour, and it's right here in our own backyard. We're in New York, WFAN, and it's at Liberty National Golf Club in Jersey City, New Jersey.
Yeah, no, we're really excited. Mizuho America's Open, it's like you said, it's the first year. And what better venue than to be at Liberty National? You know, we're really excited to be in the tri-state area. You know, we have four LPGA tournaments this year in New Jersey. So we love New Jersey, and we love that New Jersey loves the LPGA. So we're really excited to add on to that. And we hope to see everyone there.
So what are your duties as host of this tournament?
It's really nice because I have such an amazing team behind me that makes me look good, and I just really just show up. Honestly, it's the team at Excel, the team at Mizuho that are doing so much of the heavy lifting back behind the scenes that I just kind of show up, I give ideas, and they make me look great. But during the week of the event, I'll be there, I'll be very present during the week, doing some clinics with the juniors. And Mizuho America's Open is extremely special to me because of the format. It's the first of its kind. There's 120 pros in the field, and there's also 24 top-ranked junior girls that will be integrated into the field. So a little bit confusing, but there will be two concurrent fields going on, the junior field and the pro field. On Thursday and Friday, the juniors will be playing behind the pros just for logistical reasons. It's just really hard when you have 144 players on the course with daylight and everything. But on the weekend, where it gets really interesting is that there'll be two fields. So one and two on the pro leaderboard will be paired with the top junior on their leaderboard. And then three and four and paired with two, and so on and so forth. So we're really excited. The juniors, we've all been there as pros, been in their position. So we're really excited that, this week will be all about fostering mentorship, really giving a taste of professional life to these young girls, and get them prepared as best as we can. Mizuho America's, some of their big pillars within their companies is to elevate women and to advance the next future generation. So we're really excited for that. We're also partnering up with Girls Inc. So this tournament is really about elevating women and advancing the next generation.
Isn't that great that these junior players can really learn from the professionals? What a great opportunity for them.
Yeah, and we're really excited that hopefully a lot of young girls and boys will come out, and they'll see the young girls that are only going to be a few years older than them play alongside the pros. And we're just hoping that it's going to be and just inspire, women and girls all over the world that week.
It's a really great concept. I'm so glad to see that it's happening right here. And I know you've been to Liberty National. Isn't it just a spectacular venue?
It's unbelievable. Starting off the ferry ride, one of the things that Mizuho Americas has made a commitment to is elevating women. One of the things that they did, was to rent out the Conrad in New York City and pay for everyone's room. And that may not seem like a big thing, but to us female athletes, it's unbelievable to have that type of support from the tournament, and to not have to worry about, paying for an Airbnb or figuring out how to do it. They're doing exactly how the men do it, like how it's done at the President's Cup. Everyone be staying in New York City, and we'll have ferries that go back and forth for the whole week for the players and staff and, family and friends. So we're excited to have this be a really top-notch event and to show, the women, give them the respect that they deserve.
And for those of you who've not been to Liberty National, I mean, the view is unbelievable. You can see the Statue of Liberty, you can see the skyline of Manhattan. It is, and the clubhouse is ultra, modern and just beautiful design. And that ferry ride over to Liberty National, to Jersey City from Lower Manhattan is quite the thrill ride too. So it's just going to be a lot of fun. And it's great to hear that. They're actually putting all the players up because, a lot of people don't realize it, but, pro golfers and amateur golfers, obviously, they pay all their own expenses.
Yeah, it's not like team sports at all. Before we, get to make money, we have to pay for our hotel, our caddy, our PT, our trainer, whoever else we're bringing, plane tickets. And then if you don't make the cut, you're making $0. So it's a big financial, I wouldn't say burden, but more so like risk as well. Just
Sure.
because, if you don't make the cut, you're in the negative.
So I know you turned pro at the tender age of 16, right? I think that was back in
Yeah.
2005 after you just a stellar amateur career. And then you stepped away from the game in 2022. Do you miss life playing on the LPGA Tour?
I miss my friends. I get asked this question a lot. I miss my friends. I miss the competition. I'm not sure I miss the travel. It was it's brutal. 10 and a half month long season. And you know, it was a hard decision to step away, but it was just something that I felt like was best for my family, and I don't regret it.
Right. I know you're very busy now, and I wanted to talk about some of the things you're doing in a second, but I read that you started playing, Michelle, when you were 4 years old.
That's when I first picked up a club. I don't know if you would call it playing then, but yeah, that's when I first picked up my club.
So starting so young, is it good? I mean, is that a good thing, do you think, for you starting that young, or for any young golfer to start very, very young?
I think it's anything with sports, anything in general. It just depends on when kids want to pick it up. As I'm learning with my daughter, like, everyone's timelines are different. You know, all my friends' kids are doing things at different timelines, and you know, there's no right or wrong way to anything. You know, if your kid wants to, you know, paint or dance or whatever, it's just whatever they have interest in. I think it's important to present their opportunity to them. Like, you know, we'll try to get her to hit a couple, show her the golf club. No interest so far. But she likes other things. So it's just, I think the important thing is just to expose your kids to everything, all the different cultures, all the different foods, all the different sports and arts and music, and just see what they like.
Absolutely. So I know you played golf, you focused on golf. You had such an incredible career. Can you share some of your personal highlights in your career? What stands out when you look back on it?
Yeah, I would have to say, you know, the two biggest goals that I ever had growing up was, one, graduating from Stanford, and two, winning the US Women's Open. I feel incredibly grateful that I got to do both. Playing the Solheim was always a personal goal of mine every year that it was on. And I'm, you know, I got to play in five. You know, I feel like I've had such an interesting career. I've had so many ups and downs, but in the thick of it, you know, I feel extremely grateful that I got to achieve two of my biggest goals.
And that 2014 US Open, Michelle, I mean, I was there, it was at Pinehurst, and it was like back to back with the US Men's Open and the US Women's Open. So that was really unique, right?
Yeah, it was really cool. I think it was very helpful. I got to walk around with Ricky Fowler and Martin Keimer on the final day, and you know, just seeing them play such a difficult golf course with such ease made my nerves go down a lot. Obviously, we had never played Pinehurst number two before, and I just would hear horror stories about how hard it was. And you know, honestly, watching Martin Keimer shoot the score that he did and play flawlessly, it kind of got me into thinking, oh, this is doable. I can shoot this many under par, and got me into a different mindset. And just watching all the fans there and, you know, walking down 18, I would kind of imagine what it would feel like walking down the next week, being in the same position that Martin Keimer was in. And it was so cool. It was so cool to see that they kept pretty much all the grandstands, and all the grandstands were filled up. So it just proves that we can draw as big of a crowd as men, you know, with viewership on TV, with people there in person. And I thought it was really cool. I hope we have a lot more opens that, you know, are at the same venue.
Yeah. And that number two at Pinehurst, those tabletop greens, I don't know how, you know, anybody, just those approach shots, how do you get them to stay on those greens? It's such a difficult golf course. That's a huge win on that golf course, I tell you.
Yeah, I mean, I just played high fades all week. It's hard though. It's a tough golf course, no matter how you slice and dice it.
And you played in several PGA Tour events early in your career. In fact, you have the lowest round by a female in a PGA Tour event, shooting a 68 at the 2004 and 2006 Sony Open, which is incredible. What was that experience like, playing with the guys?
It was really cool. I mean, it's something that I've always wanted to do. You know, I think that growing up in Hawaii gave me a really unique set of experiences. You know, because you're not, you know, traveling that much to the mainland to play in events. It's pricey. So I started winning everything in Hawaii that I could. And then the next step up, I guess, was logically in my 14-year-old mind, was the Sony Open, which is 10 minutes from my house. And you know, when you're 14, I just didn't understand the gravity and the magnitude of it. It was just something that, okay, this is something else that's on the island that's 10 minutes from my house. It doesn't require me to fly to the mainland. But I feel so incredibly honored that, tournaments gave me a spot to the tournament and I got to play with some of my biggest heroes, my biggest idols. I learned so much. Everyone was so kind to me and made the experience so amazing.
Yeah, I mean, I just when I was a kid, I played sports with the guys all the time. Now, obviously not as a professional, but just that integration, I think, especially when you're young, is so important for girls and boys. I just like the fact that you were able to play with the guys. I think that to me, that just is a natural thing, but it doesn't happen that often with female athletes.
Yeah, and I wish it did more. I wish, there would be more crossover and, all of that. But yeah, I mean, it was just fun. I didn't, think too deeply into it, I guess. It was an amazing experience that was given to me, and I feel extremely lucky.
So the LPGA has come a long way since your younger days on tour. What are your thoughts about the growth of the LPGA, the increase in prize money, the new sponsors? What are your thoughts about all that?
Yeah, and I think we're headed in the right direction. I think we're heading upwards, which is great. But there's a long way to go still. Where we were 20, 30, 40 years ago, we have made leaps and strides. But you look at what the PGA Tour is doing, and we know that there's still a lot more that we can do. So I think it's a combination of being extremely proud of what we have accomplished so far, but also keeping an eye on where we can and should be.
Well, I think it's frustrating as a viewer many times because it's so difficult to find coverage of the LPGA on network TV. I wonder why that's the case to this day. I mean, because the crowds are there, the talent is incredible, and it's disappointing when it's hard to find coverage of an LPGA tour event.
Yeah, I mean, you see it not only in golf, you see it in a lot of different sports, but it shows. I mean, you see NCAA basketball this year, and it was given a prime time spot, and you saw how many people viewed in, tuned in. So I think it's just really it's a chicken and egg situation, people are saying, oh, we don't have enough viewership to be on prime time TV, but if you're not on prime time TV, you're not going to get the viewership. So I would love to see more networks give us the opportunity. I'm really excited that to learn that the US Women's Open at Pebble Beach will be on prime time pretty much the whole week, especially the weekend. So that'd be very, very exciting.
Well, I know you're very active on social media. I've seen some of your lessons and some of your other postings. Continued success with that, Michelle. And we'll look for you at the Mizuho Americas Open at Liberty National Golf Club, May 29th through June 4th. Thanks so much for joining us here on Talking Golf.
Thank you.
Thanks so much. My thanks to Betsy King, to Molly Marcot-Samol, and to Michelle Wee West, and to My Good Sound Production. As Winston Churchill once said, success is not final. Failure is not final. It is the courage to continue that counts. I love those words from the great Winston Churchill. Have a great weekend, everybody. Be safe, be kind, and I look forward to talking with you next Saturday morning right here on Sports Interview with Anne McGorry.